This is The Guardian.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Loads of goals, but nothing changed. We're at the sun's out, no one is blinking, over to you stage of the title race. Arsenal comfortably beat Bournemouth and Man City do the same to Wolves. At the Emirates, it took the Gunners a little while, but they created so much. Well, more proof that Erling Haaland is a flat-track bully. Elsewhere, Liverpool hammer Spurs, who now just score a couple late on to make things look slightly better. Four straight defeats for them. Is it time for perspective, or can I sound an enormous crisis klaxon? It means Villa will probably get top four even if they don't get another point, which is lucky because they might not. At the bottom, a big weekend for Nottingham Forest. They win while Burnley are hammered and Luton only draw. We'll get Nick Ames on to be emotional about Ipswich Town's promotion to the Premier League. Congratulate Bromley on getting to the EFL. Answer your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, Lucy Ward.
Hi, Max.
And good morning, Barney Ronne.
Hi, everyone.
So the title race then, Arsenal played 36, 83 points. Man City played 35, 82 points. Should we begin at the Emirates? Arsenal 3, Bournemouth 0. Lucy, you were there. How was it?
Do you know, it was a very warm day and the opening sort of half an hour of it, you could sort of, you know, when the sun comes out in England and everybody sort of struggles physically, it seemed a little bit like that. But I actually... In fact, I've got quite a few personal stories today.
Oh, here we go. That's exciting. Like, it's like an audience with Lucy Ward, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only reason I've come on. If I'm not talking about myself, I'm not coming on. That's the deal. So one of my kids, one of my many children from Leeds, Lewis Cook, now plays for Bournemouth. And TNT thought it was a very good idea that I interviewed him before the game. So I got to do that when he's like now not a little boy, he's now a man with a baby of his own. And so it was very nice. And I was with Ryan Christie as well. So there's the pair of them. And I asked Ryan Christie that Lewis Cook, when he was little, he used to have a tantrum and cry in the middle of the pitch when he lost. And I just wondered whether he still did that. So that made everybody laugh. So yeah, so that was good. That was a nice little thing for me to do all those years later. But yeah, Arsenal, you know, they sort of dominated. Though I like Iraola's team. I like the way that he sets up Bournemouth, and I like the players that he's got. I think that he's a manager that is going places. Now, whether, you know, obviously Bournemouth want to keep him, it's a project, etc. But there's just something about him that is very clever. And, you know, I could see Bournemouth just keeping going on an upward trajectory, to be honest.
Barney, you were also there. How was it for you? Did you get to interview someone that you knew as a child?
I mean, I spoke to Dave Heitner for a bit, and I've known him for quite a while. Lewis Cook played really well, I thought. And I haven't really been watching him every week or anything like that. But is he the only English footballer currently playing as a deep defensive midfielder in the Premier League? He might be. I can't think of anyone else.
Yes, probably is. Probably is, Ben. And do you know what? He's got an England cap as well, but he had two cruciate ligament injuries sort of quite close together, and he's sort of out of the reckoning. But he was the captain of the under-20s that won the World Cup a few years ago. So he's, you know, he's got that sort of pedigree.
He's played, you can see what he does. He goes really deep, doesn't he? He goes in between the centre-backs and is really comfortable there. And obviously that's something he's worked on with the manager. Obviously he's not going to get picked for the Euros, but it's odd that there's no actual English football. You know, Calvin Phillips is now going to go an entire year without starting in a Premier League team that's won, despite playing for teams that tend to win. So, I mean, he's not going to go to the Euros. I don't know who is. I don't know who's going to play in that role. This has got nothing to do with what you asked me.
It doesn't. But maybe that's a sign of, you know, it was a kind of procession, I guess, for Arsenal.
Well, no, there were interesting. There were some interesting refereeing decisions, which I've noticed. I mean, the part of that is sort of really irrelevant. Arsenal played really well and it would have been weird if they didn't win. But we kind of end up talking about refereeing decisions because the league is not really changing, is it? The battle for sixth place was being hyped up today, which may or may not be a Europa League place, maybe a Europa Conference place, depending on whether City win the FA Cup.
Right.
But that three-way battle is hotting up. But nothing else is really happening, is it? We're led to believe there's a title race going on. And you're kind of watching it happen in slow motion, but it's like it's been badly plotted. It's like a rom-com where it's too predictable. You can see there's not enough. There aren't enough obstacles. There's not enough jeopardy.
Yeah. Guy gets girl at the start and then stays with girl.
Yeah. It's not happened yet, but you can see that Sandra Bullock and, Joey from Friends are going to... There needs to be some kind of jeopardy, and there isn't. We can just see it sort of ticking itself off every week.
You mean it's boring, Barney, is what you're trying to say? It's very boring.
Well, that seems mean-spirited to say it's boring, because if you support Manchester City, it's not boring, presumably.
It might be.
Well, sometimes it feels like the defining emotion of this kind of supremacy is not jeopardy and excitement, but defiance and vindication. So if you like defiance and vindication and shaking your fist at the authorities, I mean, if you took away the 115 charges, what's the jeopardy? What's the story of this domination? I don't know. This is not supposed to be an insult, because I love watching the team. And I think that they've coached players and made them better. Obviously, Pep Guardiola is a genius. But it just is like watching this happen endlessly. It's like Taylor Swift has released seven albums at once and they're all at number one. And you have to say they're all good, or you're biased against Taylor Swift, rather than say, well, maybe something a little more ragged or original or not just the same. It's a great project. Let's just agree it's a great project.
Mm. Barry, welcome.
Hello. Yeah.
So are you going to provide the other side of this to say this is a fascinating title race? And you can't wait for the twists and the turns.
No, it's not fascinating. I don't think there will be any twists or turns. But then we saw in the Women's Super League yesterday that there was twists and turns. Not entirely unpredictable twists and turns. I think I mentioned on Thursday, Chelsea might, ratchet up their goal difference against Bristol City, which they did. And Arsenal might beat Manchester City, which they did. So it's not out of the question. I mean, you keep asking us about Arsenal's win, and so far we've addressed Bournemouth, refereeing errors, the WSL, rom-coms.
And Lewis Cook.
Cook and Calvin Phillips. And yesterday on the radio, we were also struggling to find anything, I don't know, interesting or novel to say about Arsenal's win or Manchester City's win. Maybe that's down to our shortcomings as broadcasters or pundits or whatever you want to call us. But this was a routine win for Arsenal. Odegaard played well, Declan Rice played well. It was a good team performance. They have two games left against Manchester United and Everton at home. They will probably win those games. It probably won't be enough. And I think if we're relying on Spurs to get a result against City, which seems to be the most likely possibility of City losing, on the evidence of that Spurs performance yesterday, which we're now moving on to, instead of talking about the match you've asked us about, they will get absolutely walloped.
I think so. Okay, then, Lucy, very quickly then, the decisions I think that Barney's referring to, one is Havertz winning that penalty, sort of leaving his leg in. Is this a foul or not a foul? How do you feel about this?
Well, I did get somebody very angry saying that, how dare Lucy Ward say that? That is clever, leaving his leg in. I mean, the thing is, right, it wasn't Havertz's fault that Travers kept going and went through his leg. That is not Havertz's fault. So if the goalkeeper's coming out at 100 mile an hour and Havertz can see that's... Tell you what, the master of it, Jack Grealish, absolute master of it. And do you know what? It's actually quite a skill to make it look like you're not diving and get your foot in there and get taken out.
Can I agree? It was Napoleon, wasn't it, who said, never interrupt your enemy when he is making a mistake. And that's essentially what's happened there. But you could also say that it's a foul by Havertz on the goalkeeper. Because if you deliberately initiate contact with someone where you're not trying to play the ball, which is what happened there, maybe it's a foul by Havertz. But I don't really think that. I think it's really boring. And basically what happened is it looked like a penalty, so the referee gave it. Then when they reviewed it, there wasn't enough to say it's not, because the goalkeeper comes sliding out and, you know, he's not duty bound to avoid him. And yeah, it was really clear. And it was a brilliant pass from Odegaard, and the everything leading up to that was really skillful. And as Lucy says, to actually do that, it's really difficult. What Havertz did is actually very skillful, and that's just that. But the second decision was ridiculous, and it should have been a goal for Bournemouth.
That is the push on David Raya. As Jim says, if that's a foul on Raya, should every single Arsenal goal from set pieces be retrospectively disallowed? Do we think that is that he got a beneficial treatment that goalkeepers don't always get?
Yes, I mean you're being rewarded by the referees there. You can choose a goalkeeper who's really tall, powerful, clears everyone out, and is like one of these sort of Dave Besant types. But tactically, teams don't want to do that. Raya is really good at high claims, as they call them, but he's also an agile, modern goalkeeper, and that means it's much more difficult for you to come running through everybody, clear them out of the way, and punch the ball. And he didn't do that, so it's kind of almost a tactical decision not to have that kind of goalkeeper. Why should the referee say that's a foul? Because other people are also allowed to stand there.
While we're on decisions, Barry, did you think that the Manchester City, they would have won anyway, right? It's the opening goal. The first goal is always crucial, unless Erling Haaland's about to score four in a game. But I thought that was a foul by Gvardiol, but it's not often given. Ian Wright on Match of the Day said it was one of the worst decisions he'd ever seen and is never a penalty.
I thought it was a very, very harsh decision because I'm not sure what Ryan Aitnouri was supposed to do. And I don't think there was any aggression on his part, and it was much a foul by Gvardiol on him as it was by Aitnouri on Gvardiol. It was just, yeah, I didn't think it was a penalty. But like you say, that didn't make any difference.
Coming together.
Yeah, coming together.
Lucy, do you agree with that?
Yeah, do you know, the only thing I've got written next to Man City versus Wolves is in big letters, boring. That's all I've written next to it. And I don't mean that nasty against City. Gvardiol is unbelievable, makes players better. But I can see Arsenal dominating in the next few years when Pep leaves and City are in National League North.
Manchester City fans get very upset if you suggest that watching them rout any team is boring. And that's fair enough, but I think quite a lot of them are bored as well. John Nicholson from Football 365, who's been on the podcast, he tweeted and subsequently wrote an article saying just how disinterested or uninterested, I never remember which is which.
I think it's uninterested.
Uninterested he was watching this game, and he got loads of abuse, obviously, from angry Man City fans. But, you know, if you're bored watching something, you're bored. Not everyone has to have the same opinion. I switched this game off at halftime, and I watched the equaliser at 3.
I love to commentate on City because there's so many patterns, and you can see what they're trying to do and where he's targeting. It's brilliant. I love it tactically. But when I'm sort of relaxed at home watching, it's not quite as interesting for me. However, would love to be a Man City fan and have enjoyed what they've enjoyed. But, you know, I just want to see a little bit, like Brian said, a little bit of jeopardy somewhere along the line at some point, whether that happens or not. I just don't know how long Guardiola will stay there. That's interesting, you know, because if he wins the title, what else is there to do unless you just keep winning?
I think what is weird, though, Barney, is that you have this sense of jeopardy with Arsenal and not with Manchester City, and yet they basically have very similar records so far, right? You know, City have...
Yeah, I mean, apart from one of them has won the league 6 years in a row. World Club champions.
Yes.
Apart from that, because Arsenal did win an FA Cup about 5 years ago. No, you know, you're right. But I thought City did play really well. It's a hard one. I look at the hat-trick goal for Haaland. I think it was the hat-trick goal where it was two passes straight down the middle of the pitch. A brilliant pass from Phil Foden, cuts inside, slightly heavy touch. Brilliant sort of shot into the far corner.
Yeah.
Is that not entertaining? Maybe, I don't know. It was sort of like watching a really good exhibition of something, like where it doesn't feel like it's like Torvald and Dean are doing a really good ice dance. because they're going to win anyway and no one seems to be able to stop them. But the movement and the, yeah, as Lucy says, the patterns were great. You're right, but I think it does come to the fact that you feel they could just keep winning forever if you don't change anything. Like, this will just keep happening forever. And although other teams have dominated before, and I remember it being quite boring that Man United won everything, football wasn't quite as stratified in those days. You didn't feel it was inevitable. When they won the treble, they lost a lot of games. You know, at one point, they lost something like 4 out of 11. And the treble required all these weird... And they're basically quite lucky. But when City won the treble, they weren't lucky at all. They just steamrolled everyone. And they were incredible. And they're the best team I've ever seen, I think, probably.
John Bruin asking, why are Wolves in red? To which Duncan Alexander replied, pretending to be someone's grandma again, which is a very good line, isn't it? To Anfield, then Liverpool 4, Spurs 2. This was interesting. Producer Joel saying, you know, real bring-your-own-board-game-to-school end-of-term vibes to this. Spurs' fourth defeat in a row. First time in 20 years that's happened. And was quite upbeat afterwards, Barry. He says, look, at least we played our football. And I kind of admire his stubbornness in the face of glaringly terrible playing out from the back. But I don't know what quite to make of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jurgen Klopp summed it up very well in his post-match interview, and he said we were really, 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 really good until we were really rubbish and then we were all right again. And by the same token, Spurs were really, 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 really bad until they were really good and then they were quite bad again. Spurs could very easily have been 7 or 8 nil down at half-time, and they repeatedly tried to play out of the back, out from the back, and couldn't beat the Liverpool press, so they kept giving the ball away inside their own half or on the edge of their own penalty or in their own penalty area. And, yeah, I do admire the obduracy and stubbornness of persisting with this tactic that clearly isn't working with players, several of whom just aren't good enough to persist with it. And I don't know if the idea behind it is do we just keep doing it until they get better, or do we keep doing it because everyone keeps telling me I shouldn't do it and I'm just not interested in their opinions, but it clearly wasn't working. They stuck with it. Yeah, they got well beaten. I mean, the scoreline flattered Spurs, but there was a 20 minute period in the second half where they got into the game, but that was always going to happen because the energy Liverpool's players were expending with this ferocious press is going to take its toll. So do you just try to weather the storm and not concede 4 goals? I don't really know what the logic is. I'd love to sit down with Ange over a pint, like in an off-the-record chat, and go, why are you being so stubborn?
Well, Danny Murphy made an interesting point on Match of the Day, Lucy, which is, like, you can still play out, but if you occasionally go long, like City do with Edison, then it means the defenders have to think, okay, well, we can't all press. Because he was sort of stopping the play saying, look, Vicario's got it here. And Spurs have got like a 3-on-2 up front. But Liverpool don't care because they know they're not going to knock it long.
That's when the manager can't control everything. That's about Vicario's decision-making. You know, that we don't know whether he sort of says to him, you know, every so often, let's mix it up, because then, especially against a team like Liverpool, so we could take out about 6 or 7 of them. We don't know that. I mean, the only thing I would say, I mean, nobody's going to put me off the fact that I think Postecoglou is absolutely brilliant. And I think they've found their level in terms of what the squad's all about. The squad's hardly any depth. They've had their injuries. Recruitment needs to improve. Will be really interesting when and if Postecoglou gets his own players in to play his own way. But sometimes behind the scenes, if the manager sort of is constantly saying about how he wants to play and you know, his ethos, and then when someone starts complaining, he then changes it a little bit, the players go, hang on a minute, mate, how are we supposed to buy into this if you don't buy into this? So it's about the quality of the players doing what he wants them to do, and also the quality of the decision making. I think that's quite a lot of it. And I think that what's not being said, they've suffered from losing Kane's. Harry Kane papered over so many cracks in the terms of the goals that he scored in the last few seasons. And now we're coming into the end of this season, that is pretty obvious to see. So they've not just got players who will just score goals from nothing. It was interesting when Richarlison came on and they had someone to play up to, they looked a little bit different. I don't know, Liverpool sort of maybe took the foot off the pedal. But when you've got a proper number nine that he can play off, or the way that they play, then I think that makes a difference, and I think we saw that.
Well, I was sort of working on the presumption that Vicario has been specifically told you are not to kick it long. Are you saying that might not be the case?
All I'm saying is that goalkeepers or any players, if they see trouble, you don't turn around and go, oh, I conceded that because you told me to. You make a decision and then you deal with the manager afterwards. So if Vicario's thinking he needs to play it long, regardless of what the manager says at various points, and then he can deal with the manager after the game, I think that you're sort of looking at some of the decision-making of the players is poor, to be honest.
You have to also accept that Vicario's in the team for that reason and was bought for that reason. And it's really hard to make, particularly if you've had a shocker the week before where people are saying he's really vulnerable in swinging corners, you're going to stick to doing the this is why I'm in the team, aren't you? It's really hard for him to then make decisions to abandon the thing that he feels he's good at and start lumping it down. I mean, the fact is Spurs should be better, shouldn't they, on a macro level? If you look at the stadium, they should be better, but I don't think it's Postecoglou or any of these players' fault particularly. They just keep changing the manager, losing the best players, not investing in the squad, and it will show up whatever your weaknesses are. It could have been this, could have been Ange being a bit stubborn on this or that, squad being thin. They're going to be shown up in the end if you persistently change your manager, don't invest, and what happens next will be very important. They definitely don't need to sack another manager. That would be insane.
Peter Drury said of Harvey Elliott's brilliant goal, frame it and stick it on the mantelpiece of its life.
Yes. I wondered if I'd imagined that. I was watching the highlights on that sort of ones that pop up on Google. And I thought, did he just say, do you put framed things on a mantelpiece? That's the question.
Yeah, I think you can put a framed thing on a mantelpiece with a little, you know, it's got like a little sort of cardboardy bit that will.
Oh.
But it's stick it on the mantelpiece of its life. What's the. Does that mean it's that? Is that the greatest mantelpiece? Is that what he's saying? Is it like, or is the goal? I can't work out what the mantelpiece is.
It's the mantelpiece of his life, Max. His life is a chimney breast. Yeah. His life is a chimney breast with a central vented area for combustion. Right. Yeah. And that life has a mantelpiece, like right. most chimney breasts. Right. And the mantelpiece of his chimney breast life now has that goal frame. I'm not sure those cardboard bits that stick out the back, they're too deep to work on the most mantel. I think they're more for shelves. I think it would be leaning against the wall.
Well, I've got a mantelpiece in the room I'm currently in, and on it is a bottle of wood glue and a super soaker.
Right.
So,
is it blurred as well? Because everything else looks blurred. Is your house actually blurred?
It's in a blurred house.
The mantelpiece of Barry's life is blurred.
It's blurred, yeah, that's about right.
I mean, it was an absolutely brilliant goal, and the camera angle from behind, just the way you saw it bend and you thought, well, that is in, and then just the way it arced in the top corner was beautiful. And look, Liverpool were excellent, Barry, and Salah was very good after, you know, he's not had a great couple of months, but he is good. Like we've sort of forgotten that he's really good. And the reports are that he will stay with Arne Slot at this stage, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, he was really good. And he had a shocking miss as well, which saw the funny side of. And I think his life was made easier by the fact that he was up against Emerson Royal, who was playing out of position and seems to be getting pelters for his performance in this game, justifiably so to an extent. But I did think he was getting no help from anyone. He was really left horribly exposed. And I think, was it when Harvey Elliott robbed the ball off him and crossed for Cody Gakpo? Like, he was up against two players and, you know, I don't think there was much he could do about that.
No, I'm not sure. I think dribbling into one of them was not the right choice. But I agree that he, you know, it's not all his fault.
I did think he was left horribly exposed. And then didn't him and Christian Romero have words or something at halftime? If Mo Salah stays, I thought maybe Liverpool are just saying that to force an increased or a higher bid from some team in Saudi Arabia or wherever. But maybe he will stay. I don't know.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll do the relegation fight.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Barney, very excited about the race for sixth place, the battle for sixth. We will get to it, Barney, I promise. Before that, at the bottom, great weekend for Nottingham Forest. They won, Burnley lost, Luton drew. They won at Sheffield United, Barney. And actually, this was a really good game, and Sheffield United gave a pretty good account of themselves. But in the end, you know, Nottingham Forest have some very good forward players and probably shouldn't be where they are.
Yeah, it was a good game. It was a really aggressive game, which I was surprised by. You know, Sheffield United don't have much to play for other than their already damaged pride. But they seem to really want to beat Nottingham Forest and really up for it.
Should I tell you why? It's because of the miners' strike. That's why. There's always between Yorkshire and Nottinghamshire. It goes back to that.
They draft in scab labour from Nottingham.
During
the strike.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. The atmosphere was kind of electric and the players seemed really up for it. But, you know, yeah, you're right. Nottingham Forest in the middle of their kind of signings do really have some good forward players. And I really like Callum Hudson-Odoi. I've always quite liked him. He's a local boy. He comes from around here. My son used to vaguely know him and says he's just the loveliest kid. Was always very nice to the slightly younger boys. And I think he found the rough and tumble of the Premier League and Chelsea a little bit much. And he seems to have, certainly physically, he's got stronger. He's been in the gym. I mean, he really does look stronger. But he's really gifted and he's got the ability to move sideways in a way that people just can't cope with. And he's a really good signing. And they looked delighted to win the game. They're not out of it yet, though, are they? They're not safe.
No.
Which is surprising. I kind of thought they were because Luton looks so depressed by the 1-1 draw. But it's not over, is it?
Yeah, I liked Kaminski coming up when it was one apiece. It's just rare that a keeper's up for a corner, the Luton keeper, you already have a point. But yeah, Forest 17th with 29 points, Luton 26, Burnley 24. And yeah, Hudson-Odoi, his first finish actually is brilliant.
Well, he scored the same goal twice, didn't he? And almost scored it a third time.
Yeah.
So, if it works, go for it.
And Ryan Yates is a sort of, there is a guy who is sort of, I don't know if this is harsh, Lucy, sort of eking out every ounce of talent that he has to be playing in the Premier League. Maybe that's doing him a disservice, but I felt like he kicked his whole season into the mantelpiece of his strikes. That's what I thought with that goal. I thought it was just like, I really just have it. I think it's his first Premier League goal.
Yeah, it is. I think he's scored in every single league now, from National League all the way up, which is incredible. But it just shows you that, you know, you need a little bit more than just sort of technique and skill. You need something, there's something about you mentally and your work ethic, and then it can take you far. And I think he's, you know, a prime example of that. And I'm pleased for him, actually, because every time we do Forest and he plays, he sort of leads them by example. And I think that you still need players like that in a Premier League team.
Where's Nuno for you now, Barney, on the sort of dying Jedi, ancient medieval knight gathering moss stage?
Well, he looks much happier, doesn't he? Obviously, he's not at Spurs, so that kind of helps. He looks sort of trimmer and slimmer and more excited. He's got more energy about him. I was just looking at I wanted to talk more about the miners' strike. It just hadn't occurred to me, but I have heard that before, but hadn't really sort of gone into my...
Apparently, if you need to get me to give you a lesson on English history, I'm more than happy to do so.
Well, with specific details of the footballing rivalries of the cities of Nottingham and Sheffield.
Barnsley, Nottingham Forest is the worst. Barnsley fans, yeah, because they're right at the heart of it. They can't, yeah, they still got that... underlying hatred of Nottingham.
There was a very good drama about this on BBC or ITV last year, which is worth digging out. Yes, Sherwood, that's what it's called. Worth a look.
Nottinghamshire miners decided by a majority of 74% not to go on strike and sort of became the sort of place where the kind of police presence gathered and moved from.
Right.
I mean, it's a long time ago. But,
It is a long time ago. Yeah, I mean, you just wouldn't have thought Ben Brereton Diaz would perhaps care about these sort of things, but maybe, you know.
Why? What are you saying about Ben Brereton Diaz? He has no conscience
I'm not saying he has no conscience. I'm just not sure that he's too focused on, you know, the mining strikes of the 80s. But like, I may be completely wrong. Let's move on, says producer Joel, for some reason. Third goal that Sheffield United conceded was their 100th goal that they've conceded. So that equals Swindon's record in 93-94. Swindon played 42 games in that season. Two games to go for them to beat it. Great win for Forest and made even better because Burnley lost 4-1 at home to Newcastle. And actually, Burnley started this game, Barry, kind of okay. And then familiar failings resurfaced.
Yeah, Jacob Brynn-Larsson had an effort saved by Martin Dubravka. And then Bruno Guimaraes, I thought, blatantly shoved Lorenz Assignon in the back in the penalty area. But no penalty was given to Burnley on the pitch. And VAR didn't seem to want to get involved. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was a blatant shove. Both hands in the small of his back and over he went. So maybe if Larsson had scored or that penalty had been given, it might have been different. But Jacob Murphy set up Newcastle's first goal. Callum Wilson and Alexander Isaac played very well together. Not often they start together or even on the pitch at the same time together. And they were just a real handful for Burnley's pretty poor defence, and it ended up an easy win for Newcastle. I thought Burnley would do better in a game they really had to win, and yeah, it was a largely poor performance.
Just when they had hope, Burnley. Andrew says, just the fact that Newcastle are sitting inside the top six after missing the most players through injury and suspension kill any doubts about Eddie Howe's credentials. He's faced a lot of criticism and derision during large parts of this season. Lucy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as well, I think he changed the... I think Barry just said there, alluded to it, he played sort of 4-4-2, which he doesn't normally play. So he sort of changed it tactically against Burnley because obviously it worked the way that Burnley play as well. But yeah, I think Eddie Howe has coped with, you know, the lack of players available at various points during the season, the European stuff and playing in the Champions League. It's just that, you know, with the owners that they've got, everybody's just thinking that he will be replaced at some point with a bigger name, you know, with quotation marks at the side of it. And it's a shame, really, because I think he's sort of shown that he has got the mettle to deal with a club as big as Newcastle. What I would say about that game is Kompany has got away with loads of criticism that Chris Wilder's got just because he's Vincent Kompany. And I think quite a lot of the stuff that they do is quite naive. You know, you're talking about Ange at Spurs, he's got better players. Kompany still tries to do what he does, but with players that obviously are not confident and don't really have the belief to play in that way. But I don't really think he gets much criticism, which is quite interesting. It may be because he's Vincent Kompany.
I'd also argue that, or question this suggestion that Eddie Howe has been the subject of derision. I don't think so. Who has derided Eddie Howe for any shortcomings Newcastle have? I mean, any time we've discussed Newcastle, we always caveat it by mentioning the number of injuries they have. So I don't think it's fair to say he's been the subject of derision, or if he has, I'm certainly not aware of it.
Well, I think he's sometimes accused of being defensively naive, which goes back to his Bournemouth days, but I don't think that's particularly been the case. I think he definitely deserves another season. Do you think with managers like Vince and company, I sometimes feel like it's a job interview, a season in the Premier League. It's a job interview for the job you really want to do. And you know that if you have a reputation for a style and a way of playing, that's going to mean you'll have a better career, a longer career at a slightly more important club in your eyes than if you just try and grub for points and, you know, maybe end up with 3 points more playing like Sean Dyche.
I mean, I guess if you're saying, you know, Ange is trying to bring in this football at Tottenham, and okay, you've got to look at the quality of your players, and company has tried to do the same about and actually succeeded in the Championship at Burnley. You know, so like if you have a way, you know, the company way.
But it's at the bottom of the league though, Max. Like you know, Tottenham are probably going to finish fifth. Tottenham are going to finish fifth. And so he's, you know, at times he's been absolutely brilliant in its work, but company and Burnley. And I think Barney, you know, I know you sort of tongue in cheek there, but you probably, there's a bit of truth to that. You know, so this is how I play. Who cares about Burnley sort of thing, as long as everybody can see the coach that I am. I don't know what it is. It's just, I think Chris Wilder did an interview and actually said it, basically saying, how come I'm getting all this stick and other managers at the bottom are not getting the same sort of stick that I am?
Although I don't think anyone's eaten a sandwich in front of Vincent Kompany, so that might have something to do with it. Luton 1, Everton 1. I mean, a point not really enough for Luton, Baz. I mean, they gave it a good old push. They had sort of like these three great chances in injury time, and, you know, Rob Edwards was just there with sort of his hands over his eyes.
Yeah, they always are usually give it a good old push, but that penalty Mengi gave away was just absolutely stupid. He lifted up Jared Brantwaite at a corner, and it was like a wrestling move, basically. Pick him up and sit him down.
Been much better if he'd got on top of the post, turnbuckle, and then jumped onto Jared Brathwaite like that and pinned him and said, come on, if I'm going to give away a penalty, I'm going to do it in style.
And there was no need for it. The ball wasn't anywhere near Jared Brathwaite at the time. I don't think the ball had even been kicked at the time, but you're not doing yourself any favour. And he'd also almost just scored an own goal and almost given away a penalty with what I possibly was a foul on Dwight McNeil. So it was quite an inauspicious start from Mr. Mengi. And Luton went behind. Luton equalised, as they often do. Elijah Adebayo, I thought, did really well to hold off Ashley Young, chest down the ball and finish. It is unlikely to be enough. And if you're at home against an Everton team who have not much to play for or nothing, depending on whether they go into administration or not in the next couple of weeks, you probably need to do better. But yeah, it was a dumb penalty to give away.
Let's do the race for sixth place, Barney. Chelsea beat West Ham 5-0. And they were excellent, weren't they? I mean, Cole Palmer and Madueke together were just superb.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Chelsea are cool. Maybe that's what they are. Maybe they're a ragtag bunch of kids who are just, you know, finding their way. Maybe it's like Take That. You know, they're a manufactured band,
right,
who are actually finding,
actually
we're really talented, yeah, and we've got drama and thing. Oh, they seem happy. It was nice to see them looking happy. Obviously winning 5-0 helps. They do have, they obviously have a lot of attributes like energy and speed and skill and youthfulness. And we haven't really seen any of that. We've just seen a confused version of them. And they are now closing in on victory in the battle for sixth place, although much will depend on what happens tonight with Man United at Crystal Palace. And obviously, as we know, that could be a Europa League place or possibly a Europa Conference League place, depending on whether Man City beat Man United in the Cup final. And this is the last really live issue in the Premier League, isn't it? I think Chelsea will probably get it because they seem to be enjoying themselves and playing with freedom. I don't know what that means, but they seem to have enough sort of fun about them to mean they probably won't sack the manager. Probably, maybe.
Well, Madueke said after the game, you know, we're starting to put things together and play as a team, which is what they conspicuously hadn't been doing up until quite recently. And I think if you compare and contrast Chelsea and Spurs, there's going to end up being an element of recency bias in that, oh, actually Poch did quite a good job after all. And, ooh, and Ange is a big fraud because Ange had his purple patch right at the start of the season where it looks like Poch is going to have his near the end. And that's what we'll remember.
Yeah. Gigi makes a good point, Lucy, which is, should Chelsea not sign new players in the transfer window? Like you've got these players, they're sort of learning to play together. Should you actually go, do you know what? Let's not rip this up again. Or, I mean, I don't know how much they can spend. Or I mean, if they didn't spend, then they could feasibly keep, couldn't they? Like Conor Gallagher and players that they might need to sell for PSR reasons. I may be wrong on that.
Yeah, I think they probably do need to sell. So, but all they need is a couple of Thiago Silvas. That's what they need within that squad. Because I think that, you know, that penalty incident, I think that Pochettino was quite pleased that everybody, the world saw that, because that's what he's had to deal with. You know, players who, you know, have come to new club, big club, young players who are trying to sort of prove themselves. And it's such a competitive environment behind the scenes of these young players that they all want to do well. And sometimes it overspills. And he's probably had to deal with that. And I'm actually chuffed to bits for Pochettino because I think he's a good manager. And I can only imagine what it's been like behind the scenes there since he's come in. And now he's sort of got a grip of it, sort of a tenuous grip, but it's working for him. So I'm quite pleased. I mean, and on the opposite side of that, I feel sorry for David Moyes. West Ham leaking that they're interviewing new managers, hanging him out to dry. Absolute, complete lack of class from them. And I don't really think he deserves that, David Moyes. I don't think he'll be there next season regardless, but I don't think he deserves what he's getting at the moment.
No, I mean, they weren't great. Jarrod Bowen did hit the bar three times. Look on his face when he hit the bar the third time.
Does he get to keep it? Bring it home and plant it in his garden.
He should have put it under his jumper, shouldn't he, as he walked off the pitch. West Ham reportedly in talks with Julian Lopetegui, and I heard someone on the radio saying they were a bit worried. You know, they were talking about Lopetegui. It was an expert saying, look, you know, he does have a propensity to be a bit dour. And I was thinking, if you're going to get someone in, I mean, is Spanish dour just can never be as dour as Scottish dour? Is that sort of on the dourness stakes? There's just nothing Lopetegui could do to be as dour as Moisey, Barney.
Well, he may be dour in a different way. I mean, David Moyes is the only manager who's tried to make a go of finishing, you know, top six, say, while having less of the ball. I mean, that's why he's unusual. That's quite an unusual way to try and be a good football team these days, as opposed to surviving among other better football teams. Now, I don't think Lopetegui would do that, but sort of intensive defensive stitching might be a good thing. David Moyes was interesting after the game. They said, do you think the scale of defeats like this will have any effect on your situation at the club? And he just went, no. And that was that. Because he knows he's going. You know,
yeah.
That was all the answer you needed.
Yeah, what good one-word manager answers. Be good. We could get the press conferences done very quickly. Brighton beat Villa 1-0. And they really deserved this, actually, Lucy, I thought. They had the better chances. They'd been on a bad run. Hadn't won since the 10th of March when they'd beaten Forest. Villa obviously still needs something, potentially, to get fourth place. But we had Dan Baldell on the radio saying, you know, basically, Villa are limping towards the line. One leg is still working and Spurs are limping towards it and neither of their legs are working. And that's kind of what's happening at the moment.
Yeah, I've covered Villa quite a lot. I'm going to Piraeus this week as well to do the second leg. Villa have been absolutely brilliant. Unai Emery is absolutely brilliant. But I think that the injuries that they've had to key positions, I think is now taking its toll on the group. And it's like, I think Spurs loss yesterday probably confirmed, I think, that Villa will get the fourth place. They might need a little bit more, but what do they do now? Do they go for it two goals behind on Thursday and then sacrifice a little bit of the weekend, or do they sort of split the energy between the two? I don't know what they can do, because it's going to be so difficult out in Piraeus in Athens on Thursday night to then... Is it Liverpool that they've got? Who have they got next weekend?
Yeah, they've got Liverpool.
It's on Monday.
I've covered it, like I say, I've covered them in the league and I've covered them in Europe, and they just are lacking in intensity and energy from players who have been absolutely brilliant. I mean, you know, I think they're the story of the season in terms of what's happened in the Premier League. Villa, you know, potentially being in the Champions League.
Yeah, they've got Liverpool and Palace. So I don't know, Palace, you know, are, you know, can on their day be good. So they may get no more points, but they'll probably still be okay. So yeah, that game against Olympiacos was a bit of a surprise for a lot of people because they were 2-0 down, got it back to 2-2, and then lost 4-2, missed that penalty late on, which made such a difference to the complexion of the game. But, you know, they are still in it, of course. Brentford 0, Fulham 0. Thank you, chaps. And Crystal Palace play Manchester United tonight. We'll cover that on Wednesday, and that'll do for part two. Nick Ames will join us in just a second to talk about Ipswich Town.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Ipswich promoted to the Premier League after beating Huddersfield 2-0, back for the first time in 22 years. Nick Ames joins us, Ipswich fan. How are you, Nick?
I think as you get older, you realise there is such a thing as a double hangover, don't you? A two-day hangover. So apart from that, I'm fantastic, Max. Yeah.
I've never had you down as I'm going to really, really, absolutely get totally wasted. But maybe just the mood hit you. At what point in the day had you been at it before the game even started, or were you too nervous?
Well, I mean, dropping any veneer of professionalism here, I was in the pub at 9:30 in the morning, but I was drinking alcohol-free ghost shit, Max, at 9:30 because I know how to pace myself.
Excellent.
And I saw people fall by the wayside, not me. But I was tucked up in bed by about midnight 30, so it wasn't an all-nighter.
So what does it mean? What does it mean to you this season? And just talk us through the day.
Incredible. And honestly, it's still sort of sinking in because, you know, when you've been so sort of worried about something for such a long time and spent so much emotional energy on it, and then you almost feel a bit flat when it's done, really. It's absolutely incredible. The town centre of Ipswich, I don't think, could sustain the number of people that were celebrating in it. I've never seen anything like that. There were sort of tens of thousands of people that just come in just to be part of the occasion, even if they weren't at the game or had tickets or anything like that. It was all fairly chaotic and post-apocalyptic the next morning. Massive achievement for the town and the club. 22 years out of the Premier League, and there were moments in that time. I mean, I've come on here and done a few Ipswich corners down the years, and I've been fairly negative about their prospects. And there were times when I thought I wouldn't see us get to this point again. Certainly with football in its current form, if you see what I mean. And now everything has transformed. It's completely changed for the foreseeable future. It was a fantastic day. The players were welcomed by a big flares and, you know, coach welcome that are quite popular now before the game. I know our photographer Tom Jenkins got some fantastic pictures of it that are worth checking out in a gallery on the website. And then the match itself. I'd been so worried about it all week. Totally illogically, because this is a team that doesn't mess up. It's always got it. It doesn't lose when it shouldn't. It's very, very secure. But I just thought there's always that 10% in football where a relegated Huddersfield team can do something to you. But after about 1 or 2 minutes, you could sort of tell in the tackles and the challenges that maybe Huddersfield weren't quite as up for it as Ipswich were. You might say that they didn't want to get in the way. I don't mean they wanted to get hammered or anything like that, but they didn't want to get in the way. And in the end, they picked them off really serenely. And when the second goal went in from Amari Hutchinson, who, by the way, is going to be an absolute superstar, went in just after half time, it was pretty obvious that they were going to get the job done. And then the rest of it just sort of dissolved into a haze of pitch invasions and cramming the town centre and hopping from bar to bar. Lots of celebrations from Kieran McKenna and the players late into the night. The players were definitely having a good time. It was just a fantastic day.
Yeah, I think East Anglia is not necessarily a hotbed of football, but I think people can be a bit sniffy about, you know, what football means to smaller towns or other parts of the country where it's not sort of totally central. But you get the sense that this is a town that sort of... We were chatting to a podcast yesterday on the radio saying, you know, like, since Kieran McKenna has come in, like, kids in the town are now all wearing Ipswich kits as opposed to, you know, Man City, Man United, Arsenal kits, etc.
Oh, it's crazy. All of my mates who live up there, they bring their kids to the games. They've got the shirts. They're totally invested. 10 years ago, this never happened. 5 years ago, it never happened. Ipswich lost a generation of fans, which I think is common in clubs outside the top six or seven when you're having a long period without success. You know, you're going to get hoovered up by the bigger clubs, aren't you? And it's the tide has turned now. I think the CEO went on an interview yesterday and said they've sold 60,000 shirts this season, which is crazy. But the thing as well, it's not a town club as much as a county club. I think although Ipswich has got a population of 140,000, I think Suffolk has got about 900,000 people living there. You've got North Essex too. So the catchment area and the level of potential engagement is massive because there's not many other football clubs about apart from Colchester and Norwich. So, you know, you had people coming in on Saturday from all these places just to be part of it. And I think, you know, I've always said it. It's a club with a lot of potential in terms of its, you know, how far it can grow.
Kieran McKenna has done an extraordinary job, hasn't he?
Amazing, amazing. I think, and it's easy to be a bit hyperbolic at moments like this, but he's one of the best managers on the continent in the entirety of Europe. I think the guy is remarkable. He's taken a team that was 12th in League One, I think, certainly mid-table and not doing too well. Consolidated things, built a bit in his first half season, and then he's made consecutive seasons of, you know, points tallies in the late 90s in different divisions, which is just absolutely stunning. He's not spent millions and millions and millions of pounds. I think from the starting 11 on Saturday, I think 8 of them started the game where they got promoted from League One against Exeter. So he's added to the squad judiciously with a couple of good permanent signings and a couple of fantastic loans too, like Amari Hutchinson, who I mentioned from Chelsea, who really came alive in the second half of the season, and I hope they can keep for another year. Jeremy Sarmiento from Brighton had a fantastic impact as well. And what he's done is he's improved players, and you kind of forget in all the hubbub we get about the transfer market and who should this manager sign and this and that. It is possible for a coach just to get stuck into players and juice the absolute most out of them and make them better. And a lot of these players in that squad were considered decent League One players and not much more. And he turned them into absolute Rolls Royces who were dominating games and teams in the Championship. And if you talk to any of them or people around them and people around the club, they just say that the individual work and the detail and the effort that goes into making sure every single person at that club and in that squad can fulfil their potential is astonishing. And it's a remarkable job he's done. And I mean, the guy's got such a tremendous future. And I think he alone is a reason why you can't write Ipswich off as, you know, bottom place next season or even bottom three, because the guy's absolutely got it. And I, you know, it's impossible to predict what will happen, but I think they could surprise a few people.
Yeah, there was an interesting article from the Metro years ago. I don't know if you've seen it. It's been sort of reposted saying some of Manchester United's squad are unhappy with how much influence Kieran McKenna has over Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's men. And you think, like Solskjaer at least could see that this guy was a great coach. So, I mean, in terms of next season, like, It's obviously a big jump. We've seen that this season, but you think with some sensible investment, they could surprise a few people?
I think so. I think they're not going to be able to go that wild financially, I think, because of the PSR rules. I think might not be particularly in their favour for splashing as much money as the owners might want to. But I think with three or four good additions down the spine of the team, maybe a midfield heir to Sam Morsy, who's been a remarkable captain, and again, someone who was written off a bit earlier in his career, another striker, another centre-back, a couple of good loans. I think it's possible, and I just think Kieran McKenna has shown what happens when you have faith in players, faith in individuals, and work with them to make them better.
Do you want Norwich to come up with you?
This is difficult, right? Because I do want the East Anglian derby back in the Premier League. It's been about 30 years almost. Well, it has been 30 years and 29 years. And I've got great memories of a few of those as a really young kid. But I'd just like a couple of years first where Ipswich can properly crow over them, if possible, because it's been a long time.
Also, you're incapable of beating them. So it's, you know, it's not the 6 points. It's not a handy 6 points. Because Ipswich haven't won an East Anglia derby in like years, is it? Over a decade or something?
Correct. But there's a chant going around the stadium nowadays, which is 15 years, who gives a something, we're Ipswich Town and we're going up. So, I mean, frankly, that's probably my one-line response to that question.
Fair enough. Oh, look, well done, Nick. Thanks for coming on, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
Nick Ames there, Ipswich fan, just a mighty card. Then Birmingham Huddersfield joined Rotherham as the team's relegated to League One. Speaking of pitch invasions, the Birmingham fan who belted one in from 25 yards, have you seen this in the pitch invasion? It was just absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? And like you could see, you know, him lining up to take it. That's young Ian in the background. Lying up to take this shot. And then as it went in, just the crowd who were on the pitch just turning around and just to like envelop this guy. They've just gone down. But like, this is the moment. Really, really good. So like, the playoffs are Leeds.
It's probably
Norwich.
The best yeah. goal they've seen all season.
Probably, isn't it? Playoffs are Leeds, Norwich and Southampton, West Brom. Went on to Bromley. First time they'll ever be in the EFL. They do 2-2 with Solihull Moors, 1-4-3 on penalties. Their captain put on an EFL armband before taking the winning penalty, just sort of grinning like a Cheshire cat, and then he put it away. He was, yeah, very cocky, but it worked. Yes, Barney?
Byron Webster, the legendary Byron Webster.
What makes him legendary?
Well, he played for Millwall for many years, and he's been a stalwart servant for Bromley as well.
Oh, well, good for him. And yeah, great win for them. Finally, Paul says, given that Max apparently can't tell the difference between carbon dioxide and methane, what excuse would members of the panel make if he offered them a refreshing drink he'd made in his soda stream? Yes, thank you, Paul. can't remember what we were talking about then. But anyway, that'll do for today. Thank you so
Sorry,
much.
Sorry, Max, yes, before what's happened? We go, can I just have one question for you? You tweeted last night that the public should not be allowed to vote for goal of the month on
yes.
match of the day too.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you
who
why.
Who do you think was robbed?
I think Jeffrey Schlupp was robbed, actually. And I think Eze was robbed. I think they were both
Well, that's
robbed.
The thing, you see. Now, I agree. We've had Brexit. We had Trump elected president. Mm. We've had the Tories in 2000, or for the last 14. So, yes, clearly the public can't be trusted. But I'd have given it to Crystal Palace's other goal. And I think the vote was probably split,
right?
And that's why McAllister got in.
Well, this is the theory I have is obviously the fans of any of the clubs involved in it shouldn't be allowed to vote. So you should only be allowed to vote.
Who should be allowed to vote? Just a cabal of sort of North London dinner party,
yeah.
Australian,
yeah. No,
Cambridgey.
No. So what I mean is, it shouldn't be. So like, if a team. If your team have a goal of the month, you should not be allowed to vote.
Well, how would you enforce that?
Well, I haven't thought
of really rigid policing.
I've not thought through the details. In the same way, on phone-in radio, just to make it a bit calmer, you shouldn't be able to have fans of the club who have played to ring up after that game. So it's just only, you know, so you just don't want, that's it. I'm just sort of taking the tribalism. I haven't thought of the way to make it work. Yeah, as producer Joel says, mandatory voter ID for goal of the month. That's what we need. It's the only way it'll work. I do appreciate it's not a democratic view that I have. But I just felt for Schlupp Because I'll tell you why. Schlupp's finish was like, it was a bit like McAllister, right? They both absolutely hammered the ball and Schlupp did it better. So his goal is better than McAllister's, yeah, objectively.
Schlupp's made a better noise as it hit the back of the net.
Exactly.
Than McAllister
and
did.
He caught it better. Whereas the Eze goal, I can see, like, some people like a banger, some people like a slick passing move. I get that. But yes, that's how I feel. I feel strongly about it. Anyway, thank you, Barry. Thank you for the question. It was worth asking. And thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Cheers, Barney.
Cheers. Thanks, everyone.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stephen.
This is The Guardian.